Hi, this is John Stone Street, president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, which you can find online at breakpoint.org. The Colson Center is pleased to support listening in. Enjoy the program.
I'm Warren Smith, and today you're listening in on a conversation I had with the senior vice president of the Orlando Magic, Pat Williams.
What are you guys doing? Traveling all over the place in this bus and doing these concerts. And she said, we're trying to encourage people and teach them and share with them the importance about this relationship with God through Christ. And she was gone. And I'm standing there, the bus is leaving, and I'm standing in the parking lot holding this little booklet, wondering what in the world is going on here.
Pat Williams is a man who, at age 77, still seems to get more done than many people half his age. He began his sports career as a baseball player in the 1960s, but when he didn't advance past the minor leagues, he went into management, rising quickly to become the general manager of the Spartanburg Phillies in 1967, where he was also named the Minor League Executive of the Year at age 27. But he's best known as an executive in the National Basketball Association. During his 12 years with the Philadelphia 76ers, that team won the 1982-83 NBA championship and became a dominant team in the league. He was part of the investment group that started the Orlando Magic in the 1980s, and he's been there ever since, though he's also written nearly 100 books and is active as a public speaker. The National Religious Broadcasters met this year in Orlando, Pat Williams' hometown, so I sat down with him to hear the story of his conversion and to talk about his latest book, The Success Intersection, What Happens When Your Talent Meets Your Passion. Pat Williams, first of all, thank you so much. Welcome to the program. It's great to be with you. I've known about you for many years. You've been a speaker at our Colson Fellows program. And, of course, I heard you give your testimony this past weekend at a group that at a meeting that you and I were both at. And I'd like to start there, as a matter of fact, if you're willing, to talk about how you became a Christian believer. It was a fairly remarkable story.
Well, Warren, here's really, in a nutshell, what happened. I grew up in a church going home in Wilmington, Delaware. Went to a Baptist college, Wake Forest. In fact, my dorm was right next to the chapel at Wake Forest. But there was something missing in my life spiritually. I got into the baseball business as a minor league catcher for 2 years, and then the Philadelphia Phillies opened the door for me to enter into the front office of baseball. I spent 4 years running the Phillies minor league ball club in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And we had wonderful success. We had some terrific teams, some future major league ball players. We were promoting people in there and turning every night into Mardi Gras at the ballpark. And there was a great deal of attention that came along with that, and awards. And we won attendance awards. And 1 year I was named the Minor League Executive of the Year, and things were good. Except there was one thing missing, and that was, with all the success, there was still an emptiness in my life. I thought if we could just pile up enough triumphs here and accumulate enough trophies and get enough newspaper headlines, that's what life really would be all about, and my career would start soaring, and I'd be heading to the big leagues. But there was this emptiness, this void, and I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't go off the deep end. You know, I was not a drinker. I was not a druggie. You know, I was a clean liver, but I didn't know quite what to do. And then I look back now, there were some circumstances where some Christian athletes came across my path. They were different. These men that I encountered were, well, there was a radiance about them. They had a purity to their life. They didn't preach to me. But you could tell they were different, and I was attracted to that. And so that was kind of the opening for me, except I still hadn't really got this resolved until one night. I was 27 years old. I went to a folk singing concert. I don't know why I went. You know, better than watching TV at home, I guess. But I went, and this folk singing group, which I was unaware of. Halfway through the concert, they started singing about this personal relationship they had with a living Savior. I'd never heard talk like that. And then they talked about their own personal relationship with God through this person, Jesus Christ. I had not heard the name Jesus a whole lot, except when a ball player in the batting cage fouled a ball off his foot.
Right.
Or the carpenter, you know, hit his thumb with a hammer by mistake. And then you'd hear about Jesus somehow entered into that world. These young people were singing and talking about Jesus. After that concert, I slipped up to the front. I was single at the time, and there was a young blonde-haired gal in that group, cute as could be. They had said that she was in nursing school, and I went up to her and thought it might be in her best interest to meet me. And I was trying to maneuver this conversation the way I wanted it to go, but all she talked about was what the Lord had done in her life. And then when they were all ready to leave, she handed me a little booklet. She said, "Read this." I'd never heard of this booklet, The Four Spiritual Laws. I'd never heard of that organization that they were part of, Campus Crusade for Christ. Never had heard of that. But I read that little booklet that night, and boy, it was an eye-opener. And I thought, boy, I need to talk more with this girl. And so I called her. I took a shot where they might be staying. I called her hotel room, and sure enough, she picked the phone up. I was a little bit nervous. I told her, you know,
a little bit nervous, but a little bit bold as well.
Well, I mean, I was pretty bold, wasn't it? Yeah. And I was not exactly a Don Juan in those days. But she picked the phone up, and I identified myself. I thought she would be thinking, boy, this guy is really weird. But I asked if she was available in the morning before the bus left for the next stop, and she said yes. So I met her at the restaurant. She was there. She showed up and had about an hour, and I asked her to walk through this booklet with me and explain it in detail, and she did. And it wasn't very complicated, Warren. I thought it would be way over my head, but she simply pointed out that that God, the creator of the universe, loves me. I never heard that before, I don't think. Maybe I did, but I wasn't listening. Said he loves you and has a great plan and purpose for your life. And that was absolutely revolutionary news to me, a plan and purpose, because I'd wrestled with that. What am I doing in this baseball business? And why am I doing what I'm doing? Does it really matter in the overall scheme of life? She said, God's plan for you is spot on. He nothing is going to surprise him. He knows exactly this plan and that he has for your life. And then I said, Warren, well, why am I not aware of it? And she said to me, because there's sin in your life. Over the bacon and eggs that morning, I had been out with a few women in my day, but never had heard them talk to me about sin. That's the first time that ever came up. And I argued with her a little bit. I said, you know, I've never spent time in jail. I've never murdered anybody. I've never been out drunk. And she explained to me that all have sinned. We've come short of the glory that God has. And she said, your independent attitude, or our independent attitude, thinking we can make it on our own, you know, really puts us in the sin category. She said, have you had a perfect life? I said, no, I've sinned. She said, well, we got to deal with that. And then she explained that's why Jesus came to this earth for the 33 years he was on planet Earth, to teach and lead and be a moral example, but primarily to sacrifice his life and take the sin debt that we all had and take it on his shoulders on that cross so that we could be forgiven and have a brand new, fresh start with God. That's really the mission that Jesus came for. And then now the bus was warming up, Warren. She had to get out of there, and they were heading to the next stop. And the last thing she said to me was, now it's decision time for you. I don't know whether she used my name or not. Maybe so. She said, now you got to make a decision whether you're going to accept this Jesus into your life and receive him. She said, like all of us have, meaning the singing group. She said, that's what we've done. That's why we're out here singing. Because I had asked her, what are you guys doing? traveling all over the place in this bus and doing these concerts. And she said, we're trying to encourage people and teach them and share with them the importance about this relationship with God through Christ. And that, and she was gone. And I'm standing there, the bus is leaving, and I'm standing in the parking lot holding this little booklet, wondering what in the world is going on here.
You're listening in on my conversation with Pat Williams. His latest book is The Success Intersection: What Happens When Your Talent Meets Your Passion. Pat Williams, at age 77, is still the senior vice president of the Orlando Magic. He's a member of the Wake Forest Sports Hall of Fame, and he was inducted into the Delaware Sports Museum and Hall of Fame in 2001. In 2012, Williams received the John Bunn Award, presented annually by the Basketball Hall of Fame for significant lifetime contributions to the sport. I'm Warren Smith, and we'll continue our conversation with Pat Williams after a break.
Hi, I'm John Stone Street, president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. You can help us carry on the legacy of Chuck Colson by becoming a Colson Fellow. To find out more about this intensive one-year deep dive program into Christian Worldview, go to breakpoint.org and click on Colson Fellows at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Warren Smith, and today you're listening in on my conversation with Pat Williams. When we left Pat, he was standing in the parking lot in Spartanburg, South Carolina, having been confronted for the first time with the claims of Christ. Let's get right back to his story. But you didn't make a decision then.
No, I didn't. It was clear to me, you know, I really understood what she was saying, and it was not like Warren. She said, before I leave, Pat, she said, I want you to pray with me. And that didn't happen. But I knew that something was going on big time that day. And I needed to talk to somebody. I needed somebody to help me decipher all this that was, had hit me like a boulder. And the only thing I could think of was to go see Mr. Little John. Mr. Little John was the owner of our baseball team. He ran a big tanker trailer company, and I knew he would understand. I needed somebody who would understand what was going on.
You knew he was a Christian?
Oh, very much so. He was a deacon at First Baptist Church of Spartanburg and a very generous donor and talked openly about the Lord. You know, and I'd been around him now for 3 years, and I knew he would understand. So I went out to his office and walked in, and I think he could tell something was going on. It was about 4:15 in the afternoon, and I told him what had happened, and this booklet and this girl and all that was happening. And he very calmly just said to me, he said, well, Pat, he said, your time has come, it looks like. You know, this is your moment. I think it's important that you just get this all squared away right now, and you just go on and make the... And that was how he talked to me. Well, I didn't need a whole lot more. I remember just collapsing in his arms. Just threw my arms around him, and just tears were streaming down my face. And, whew, boy, I mean, it was very emotional. But after all that, I straightened up, and I realized something big had happened in my life, that Jesus had come in and taken residence inside of me. I couldn't explain it all, but I knew it had happened. And I felt immediately this sense of pardon, and there was a peace that began to immediately invade my life. And Mr. Littlejohn started talking to me about this sports business that I was in and the platform that it would be and the influence I could have in as a Christian sports person. And I immediately felt this supernatural love that invaded my life. That was really amazing to me, that I suddenly felt love for everybody. You know, the one thing, Warren, I didn't say the other day is, you know what I did? I got in the car. The girl had told me that they were going to Columbia, South Carolina, and I thought, I got to get down there. It's about an hour and a half drive. it was a Friday. I said, I got to go down and tell her what has happened. I had no idea where they were performing, but darned if I didn't take off for Columbia. And got down there on the campus, and I kept asking, do you know anything about a singing group or where they might be? And somebody finally said, why don't you just try that? And sure enough, there they were.
Wow.
Singing the same concert. But it was like I heard them this night with different ears. I mean, suddenly they're singing, and I'm saying, yeah, I understand all this. And guess after the show was over, guess who tiptoed his way up to the front? Yeah, your old buddy here, Warren. Because I had to tell this Sandy Johnson, the little blonde, what had happened. She saw me coming, and I really got the feeling like, is this guy stalking me?
Right.
That was a
little. That'd be my first.
Yeah, he's chasing me all over South Carolina? But I felt I had to tell her, and I did tell her what had happened later after she had left. And she was happy. She was very, very happy. And now it would be a wonderful story if Sandy Johnson and Pat Williams, you know, walked down the aisle together. That didn't happen.
Did you stay in touch with her any after that?
Well, I saw her one time. A few years later, I became the general manager of the Chicago Bulls. She lived in the suburbs of Chicago. And I looked her up, and I went and picked her up, and we went out to dinner. And it would be a great story to say, wow, and that was the start. Now, the dinner was fine, but there was no great spark there,
right.
You know, romantically.
Yeah.
But for that brief period, God used her in my life in a very mighty way.
Well, he certainly did. And you're well known in the sports world as being someone who's outspoken for their Christian faith. Was that the beginning? Were you on a trajectory from that moment on, or were there ups and downs and fits and starts? Or what was your sanctification process like from that salvation moment forward?
I would say, Warren, it was immediate. You know, I was, immediately out on my feet. You know, sharing my faith, I mean, like within hours, I guess. And then I was in Spartanburg till the end of that baseball season, and then went to Philadelphia in the NBA and got involved with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes there. And I was being called upon pretty quickly to speak here, speak there, and then on to Chicago, where we had another mighty work of the FCA there. And
yeah,
getting opportunities all over Chicago land. And so I have, it was almost instantly that, and I felt that God wanted me to be doing that, that he had given me a platform.
Yeah, so Mr. Little John was right. He had, that sports has provided you with that platform. I do, though, wonder, Pat, and if you'll forgive me for kind of asking, a little bit of maybe a tough question here, is that the professional sports world, especially at the level at which you play, is not all sweetness and light. It's not all peaches and cream. You've been able to have a positive influence there, and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and other organizations have. But have you ever had moments of disquiet about being a part of an industry that while it produces much good, also produces some coarseness in the culture as well? How do you reconcile that? How do you think about that,
Warren,
as a Christian?
Yeah, I understand that, but that never really has been an issue. I felt that God kept me in the sports business. In other words, when I came to Christ, it was a matter of saying, Lord, whatever you want with me, you know, I'm going to do it and just take my life. And boy, that was a big step. And I didn't know what was going to happen, but he kept opening doors in the sports world, and I've been in it ever since, my whole adult life. And I really feel that I'm there to make a difference, to share my faith, to encourage young ball players to write and uplift people through my writing. So in other words, God has given me that platform that Mr. Little John said to me that very afternoon. He said, now you've got a real platform, Pat. And he said, you're going to have an opportunity to really, really do some good here.
You're listening in on my conversation with Pat Williams. After a break, we'll talk with him about his new book and why he thinks men in their 70s and even their 80s still have a lot to contribute. More with Pat Williams when we return.
Hi, I'm John Stonestreet, the president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, and I'm delighted that the Colson Center is now the lead sponsor for Listening In. The Colson Center exists to inform, equip, and unite believers. And that's why we're delighted to unite with World to bring this informative program to you, a program designed to better equip you for the work of the gospel. To learn more about the Colson Center and our Breakpoint radio and podcast ministries, please visit us at breakpoint.org. That's breakpoint.org.
Welcome back. I'm Warren Smith, and today you're listening in on my conversation with Pat Williams. In addition to his outsized success in sports management, Pat Williams is the father of 19 children, including 14 adopted children. He's also written more than 100 books, many of them edited transcriptions of speeches he's given to corporations around the world. I asked him about his latest book, The Success Intersection: What Happens When Your Talent Meets Your Passion.
Well, I think what I've learned, Warren, is that when your greatest talent or your best talent intersects with your strongest passion, well, that's the sweet spot in your life where that intersection takes place. That's your sweet spot. And what I'm saying in the book is that's where you want to live. That's where you want to be educated. That's where you want to work. That's where you want to get paid every 2 weeks, right there in the sweet spot. And I'm encouraging people, particularly young people, to really focus hard early. What is it that you're good at? When God puts you on this earth, what skills did he give you? What abilities? Look at it very, very frankly. And that's where parents and grandparents and coaches and teachers come in to help identify skills and talents and abilities that young people have and then begin to encourage it and nurture it and get prepared to work in that area or make that your life's work. I think passion comes along, Warren, when you begin to have some success, when you begin to do well and you begin to see results and you get excited and enthusiastic and energetic about what's going on. And so now you've got talent and this enormous amount of passion. Boy, what a combo.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
known as in Florida as a combo platter. and that's where you want to stay and keep building that talent. I do stress that we may come to this world that God plants us here with skills and talent, but you got to work at it, and you got to keep practicing, and you've got to keep improving, and you've got to keep uplifting and keep going, because if you stop, you know, you're going to fall backwards.
Well, let's stipulate for the record that anyone that wants to discover their success intersection, what their talents are and where their passions are, they should read this book. So we'll just stipulate that for the record right now. But in a nutshell, for those that maybe haven't read the book yet, or we'll get to the book or maybe won't read the book, what would you recommend? Is there a key takeaway of a, probably not a lot of kids listening to us, Pat, honestly, but maybe a lot of parents, maybe a lot of coaches, maybe a lot of grandparents, maybe a lot of teachers listening to us who have kids in their lives that they want to help discover that success intersection. What would you recommend to them?
Talk openly to children about it. Like this, Warren. Jack, I'll tell you what. I've watched you in the classroom and out on the playground, and boy, you have leadership ability. I mean, these kids are all following you, and they all want your approval. And, you know, I can see you becoming a great leader one day. Or how about this one? Mary, I love the way you write. You know, your word choice is great, and you're very creative, and it's just wonderful to read what you write. And I see writing ability up ahead in your future. Well, those kids are going to remember that. That might not be quite the path they take, but when you begin to plant in young people what you see and what you spot, because they don't know, Warren. I remember... I guess this was probably 1964. My playing days were over, and I'd spent that year as an assistant in the front office in Miami, which was a Phillies farm club. And the general manager was a longtime baseball guy. His name was Bill Durney. Before I left at the end of the year, he signed a picture for me of him. And here's what he wrote to Pat Williams, a young man with a wonderful present, but an even greater future in this business, building. I didn't know, Warren, whether I had a brilliant future, but that picture sure was an eye-opener. In other words, Mr. Durney is saying that he approves what I'm doing, and he sees a bright future for me. Boy, that was a turning point for me.
Well, you know, I've noticed with two boys of my own and with in men in my life, and boys, sometimes, you know, a man, an older man, just putting their hand on your shoulder and giving you a word of affirmation, a word of blessing, a word of in some ways it does feel like a word of blessing, almost like you're being knighted in a way to go out and conquer the world. It makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Huge. Huge. The words that we say, Warren, are awfully important, particularly when they come from people we respect or people that we have belief in. When they say, boy, can't wait to see what you're going to do when you get out there in the real world. Boy, I love the way you this, that, or the other. We always remember it. I did that with one of my sons, Bobby, who loved baseball. And I kept talking to him as a youngster coming along. I said, Bobby, you got a future in this business. May not be as a player, but I said, I can see you coaching and managing and scouting. Well, guess what he's done his whole adult life? With the Reds, the Nationals, and now the Angels, he has coached, he's managed, he's been a farm director, and now he's a pro scout. And he's approaching 40. I mean, that's his whole adult life. But I can remember as a young boy, you know, knowing that he loved baseball, and he wasn't good enough to be an outstanding player, but I began to feed into him, you know, my thoughts. I said, Bob, you got a future in baseball far beyond the playing field. You're going to – and he would tell you, I think, today, Warren, that impacted him. Karen, my daughter's a singer in Nashville, a gospel singer, and same thing. I remember as a young girl, you know, encouraging her. I said, Karen, your voice, boy, this is your calling. Took her a little while to figure that out. But she went off to Nashville in her late 20s, and she's doing fine.
That's great. Well, Pat, we're coming to the end of our time. Okay. I just want to ask you one final question in closing. You've had a lot of success in life. You've made a lot of money, I would guess. Orlando Magic now down here in Orlando, where you and I are having this conversation. You've written a lot of books, spoken to a lot of people. At the end of the day, though, they're not going to put a whole lot of words on your gravestone. What do you want people to remember Pat Williams for?
That he made a difference in people's lives. I feel my calling right now, Warren, is to invest back down in the next generations because over the years, back through my upbringing and all, there were so many people that invested in me, taught me, and encouraged me and got me going in the sports business. I want to pass that on down through my speaking, through the books that I'm writing. And this is probably scary to the trees out there, Warren, because we've chopped down a lot of trees to publish these books. But I've got about probably 25 books in the pipeline.
Wow.
That I would like to write. Now, the only way you write them is if there's a publisher who says, yeah, we'll do that with you. But they're more in the pipeline. So, and that's another little discussion for another day, Warren. I think your most productive years should be in your 70s and 80s, if your health is good. You know, by then your kids are raised and you've made your mark in your profession. And there's so much that people in their 70s and 80s and on now these days, on into your 90s, I mean, you should be on top of your game at that point.
Well, I would love to have that conversation with you because one of my pet peeves is that men that, you know, get to be, especially successful men, make a lot of money and they, you know, retire early and they go off and they're basically inaccessible to their churches, to their kids, to their grandkids. And one of my pet peeves, but unfortunately, we're going to have to hold that for another day.
We'll discuss
another
that.
Another reason to get back together in the future. Thank you, Pat Williams. Appreciate it very much.
Good to see you, Warren.
Thanks. You've been listening in on my conversation with writer, speaker, and sports executive Pat Williams. His latest book is The Success Intersection: What Happens When Your Talent Meets Your Passion. We had this conversation at the annual meeting of the National Religious Broadcasters in Orlando, Florida. Listening In comes to you from World News Group, and it's made possible by World's members and financial supporters. To find out more about becoming a member of World, you can go to getworldnow.com. Today's show was produced by Rich Rosel, with technical assistance from Michael Huckabee. The executive producer is Nick Eicher. I'm your host, Warren Smith, and you've been listening in.